folks, before we start, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to our first episode of Drink History. Please pardon some of the audio clipping. As we get situated with our setups to record safely during the pandemic, some of the audio might be a little wonky as we figure out what programs are going to work best for us. But we really appreciate your patience and hope you have fun. Here we go. Welcome to our very first episode. I am your host, Alexa Wilkinson.
And I am your co-host, Mia Fiorito.
And this is
Drink History.
Yes. Today, we are going to be diving deep into the bottom of that elusive bottle of where the hell the name cocktail comes from. Where is it from? Who invented it? What was the first cocktail?
Why?
And hint, why? And hint, it's not what you think it is. And to help us answer all these questions, we'll be interviewing mixologist and beverage educator Estelle Bossy. And we're going to have a really fun time doing it. And she was a delight to talk to.
Yes.
All right. So Mia, my friend.
Yes.
My love, my light. Let's start off with this. What is your favorite cocktail?
So my favorite cocktail, I guess, like, recently, in the most recent times of day and age, whenever I was I guess not recent because of 2020, but when I was going to the bars, I was ordering myself the Manhattan. I was having a Manhattan.
Really? What brought on a love of a Manhattan for you?
Honestly, I have no idea what it was. I was never a whiskey girl. I was never this or that or the other. I think it was the cherries, which I hated going into ever having my first Manhattan. I was like, this is the most disgusting thing ever. But out of nowhere, I think I just really started to appreciate whiskey and all that stuff. Maybe, you know, becoming a bartender finally. Like, mm-hmm. opened my eyes to all that stuff. And yeah, the Manhattan. I would say the Manhattan.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you this question. So that's your favorite cocktail. What was your first cocktail?
Oh, no. I don't even want to talk about my first cocktail.
Briefly tell me how your first cocktail went.
All right. I'm going to put it in bullet points for you. Okay. There's gin, I was going to say green, but it's got to be cucumber. So
something green.
Gin, cucumber, martini glass. I don't know what else. I'm going to say green. Let's say green too, because and blackout, 21st birthday, terrible. It was my first cocktail. I don't even remember what it was called.
Your first cocktail was a gin-based cucumbery green martini.
Yeah,
okay.
Terrible.
All right. So my first cocktail, I can't even categorize it as a cocktail, but it was a mixed drink, and it was Jameson and ginger. And The only reason that I remember that is because when I first started drinking, I was a touring musician that was definitely not 21. But the only thing that we had available in the green room for me to drink was Jameson. It was like on the rider for every musician I was touring with.
Right.
So I drank a lot of Jameson, and I'm sorry. I'm not a big fan of just drinking straight up shots, even though I definitely went through a phase. I drank a lot of Jameson gingers, and that kind of carries on. Like, sometimes when I'm feeling nostalgic about like the days of yore, which that's a time period, for everyone, I will order myself a Jameson ginger if I'm feeling like I really want to get back into my 19-year-old roots.
I will say that's not a terrible first cocktail or mixed drink.
It's pretty weird as a 19-year-old to be having some like Jameson.
It's kind of
in
hard.
A glass. It's hard. It's hard.
It's kind of hard.
And I'm gonna say that I'm not proud of it, but I'm just telling you the facts as I know them in my brain. Okay, so this episode is our very first episode. I'm really, really excited. I've never been more nervous and excited about something in my whole life. But what I have to say is that this feels really natural to talk about, because I feel like booze seemingly overwhelms a lot of our lives, whether it's on like TV shows or it's on like everything that we search on Google, like everything that we do, especially around the pandemic, has been like, you know, stock up on wine, cocktail happy hours over Zoom. The thing we miss the most is going out to a bar and grabbing drinks with people. It's all really revolved around drinking. And so I think that this podcast for me really spawned from just kind of trying to understand, like, when I go to a bar and I order a Jameson Ginger or a vodka martini, like, what, where does that come from? Like, what are the origins of what's in my glass? Mm-hmm. And I think the reason you and I sort of bonded over this is because we have the same kind of love of this education and that we don't know everything. We want to learn it.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. So I think so drink history, just so everyone is aware. So this podcast is about kind of the origins of what we all have in our glass. And there's really a heavily theorized origin story of the cocktail. And what I really love about this episode is we're going to talk to Estelle Bossy, and she is so knowledgeable. And we're going to learn a lot about sort of the origins and the nostalgia and the romanticizing that we do around the origins of cocktails. But I think really what we're trying to do in this podcast is kind of just talk about how humans are really connected in a way in terms of the stories we want to tell within our own lives, especially something that revolves around booze. So the cocktail we're going to talk about today and kind of the origin story of cocktails, which you're going to find out a lot more later, but the Sazerac, and that's what we're drinking right now, mm-hmm. you and I. And what this drink is sort of a mutation of a bunch of different cocktails put together. And spoiler alert, was not the first cocktail, as we've come to find out. But
after so many times of research.
Yeah, and I think that's what's interesting is when you look at the top sheet of Google searches about what the first cocktail was, this romanticized story about the Sazerac mm-hmm. is what we all find. And I think what's really interesting is that we come to terms with these origin stories and these passionate ways that people tell them, and we sort of implement them as fact into our brain. Mm-hmm. And that's why for so long, I think so many people have perpetuated the myth that the Sazerac is the first cocktail. Let's not kid ourselves. This is a delicious cocktail.
It's so good.
It's so good.
And First time ever.
And that is a shame point for me. I had never been... No one, when I was a bartender or a bar manager or in any capacity of making someone a drink professionally, no one has ever ordered a Sazerac from me, mm-mm. ever. And I've never had the push or the drive to really try one. But this episode, this podcast, this sort of origin story really made me want to like make it the correct way. And so what we did for this Sazerac, and we're going to post a recipe video, which will be available on the TikTok, Instagram, our YouTube channel. But the Sazerac that we made is muddled Dem sugar, a little bit of water, Peychaud's bitters, Angostura bitters. You muddle that all together. You throw in equal parts cognac and Sazerac rye, and then you stir it around in a beautiful little mixing glass with some ice, strain it. Sometimes it says over ice. Sometimes it says just straight up into a chilled glass. You and I chose the absinthe washed chilled mm-hmm. glass and ice cube because, you know, we like to keep it classy. And then you top it off with a lemon peel. And it's really simple, but it's so delicious. It's refreshing. Mm-hmm. It's citrusy on like a
it's
top
got a little
note.
Bit of that bite, which I love from that rye. It's great.
Yeah, the heat. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's great. And I've never had it before, but it's actually now one of my favorite cocktails to make. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to... have another drink after this. I think I'm just done. Podcast over. Done. One episode and done.
Well, no,
just kidding.
You said that you really like margaritas, so we're definitely
I do. Yeah, so when it comes to favorite cocktails, mine is margarita. And the reason I love a margarita is because I'm a citrus fiend. Like I love lemon on basically everything, and I love lime juice, but I like it when it's all balanced. And when you have a rim of salt, which I eat salt. Like I love pretzel salt. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those like sodium addicts, but I love just like licking a rimmed glass of salt and having this beautifully balanced, like lime fresh margarita. I just
so refreshing.
It's tart. Any time of year, tart, sweet. It's beautiful. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Estelle Bossy, and she's going to teach us all about cocktails and everything that they have to offer.
Yes.
Yes.
It's break time, baby.
Great. So who we have with us today is Estelle Bossi. She is a mixologist and beverage educator here in New York City. We're so excited to have you. So thank you for joining us today for a brand new very first episode.
Yes, thank you.
Wonderful to have you with us.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited at any opportunity to just talk about libations, one of my favorite subjects.
So let's get into it. All right. So Estelle, we have questions for you.
Yes.
Because this episode is specifically about the history of the cocktail. And the problem we were having as like novice, I would say just people on Google in general, I guess we're just like not diving deep. We're only going to like the first page. But everything that we've looked up says Sazerac. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you're going to tell us that this isn't accurate.
Yeah. Yes, I am going to tell you that. You want me to tell you that right away?
Yes,
do you want me to, because do you want me to sugarcoat the spear?
pun intended with the sugar, I think that you should tell us a little more about how we've all been lied to. How did Sazerac get such a good PR agent? And why do we all think that Sazerac is like the first cocktail?
Well, first, let me start by saying that with almost every cocktail or like element of cocktail history that we try to look into, what happens is a lot of competing stories, many of them seem to be myths or rumors that have just continued over time. And, you know, I attribute the sort of messiness of cocktail history to a few different things. And I think one of them is that we didn't really have like historians of cocktails until quite recently. We had people who were passionate about them. We had people who loved them as a hobby or used them for their profession and made them for their professions. But that didn't necessarily mean we had somebody who was looking at sort of the stories behind these historical drinks and applying the same methodology that historians apply in most other arenas of, you know, the arts and human creation. So in the last 20, 25 years, we've gotten a couple of historians who have decided to start looking at the history of alcohol and imbibing and cocktails and older versions of drinks, because cocktails are not as old as some beverages. So now we're getting more sort of like accurate information where historians are going back to source documents, going back to things like advertisements and newspapers and figuring out, okay, this story, this urban myth that's been repeated, this oral history that's been told about this particular drink, whether it's the Sazerac or something else, for decades and maybe even 100 years, what was really happening at that time? What were people saying? What were these restaurants and bars publishing? What were travel writers who drank saying? And so some myths are being deconstructed, and really what happens a lot of the time is just we don't often know the real story behind a specific drink. And in fact, it's very rare that there's a cocktail where everybody's like, oh yeah, that was created by this person at that date in this location. More often you have multiple origin stories from multiple different places, and you're sort of weighing that matter against it. Right. And there isn't really an easy answer a lot of the time, because let's talk about creativity. It can happen in multiple places at the same time. I could be in Paris and you could be in New York, and if we came up with a pretty simple drink, we could come up with the same thing without ever talking to each other or running our ideas past each other. So one thing to talk about is like, why is the Sazerac famous? Because it's delicious and it has a great story. Even if that story is not its true origin story, that story has helped it stay alive in our hearts and on our palates. So that's like one of the big problems. I think too, we've got to define like, what are we saying when we say cocktail, right? So like right now, the dictionary says a cocktail is a drink made of like spirits and juice or maybe cream. And what a cocktail was defined as in the early 1800s, when it first becomes used as a word for a beverage, is, you know, spirit, bitters, sugar, and water. So nowadays, when we say cocktail, we mean like a mixed drink. But in the early 1800s, a cocktail was something a little bit more specific.
Right.
Tell us what it was. Mia, you had a question. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no. I was going to say, I was actually really interested in the story behind the Sazerac, because you were saying that it had a pretty cool story behind it. But I also just wanted to bring up Alexa and I, when we were Googling, and I just, like, I can't get over it, the word cocktail. So we found so many little sites talking about horse talk where people were putting ginger and hot things up a poor horse's bum.
And oh, I love that you read about gingering. Gingering, it's like you learn the weirdest things when you study. I mean, maybe this is true of all fields of history, but I study more cocktail history than other types of history, and you just learn the most bizarre things. So you're talking about gingering. Yeah. And gingering was a technique of putting ginger up a horse's bum to make them seem really lively.
That would wake me up in the morning if someone was like, take some ginger right in the tuchus.
Well, to be honest, spirits were really harsh back then, right? There weren't as, distillers weren't necessarily as careful, and they certainly weren't regulated. So the effect of a cocktail in the early 1800s might have been similar to what those poor horses experienced when people put ginger up their bottoms.
Right.
But I think you bring up a super interesting point, Mia, and it was sort of one of the things I was thinking about, which is the etymology of the word cocktail. And there are, you know, sometimes with etymology, you know, there's a clear line as to how a word emerged. And with cocktail, there is not really consensus amongst the historians. So as you mentioned, gingering, which puts a tail's horse up in the air and makes them very frisky, kind of like what a cocktail does to people. There's another, so I would say there's also something that's not talked a lot about in this country, but more in the UK, which is cock ale in the 16 and 1700s was a beer brewed with like a rooster carcass in the brew. That may have been a predecessor to the word cocktail. And one of the ones that I do like, because it feels very American, and you know, the thing about cocktails are, whether there was a cocktail made outside of the United States or not, we are definitely the country where they flourished and became sedimented in our culture very quickly. So I like this origin story for the word cocktail, which does involve horses. And basically, horses that were not thoroughbreds had their tails cut off, and they were called cocktails. Mm. And it came to be a term that meant not just a horse with its tail that was docked, but also like an imposter. So like, you know, a carpetbagger pretending to be a gentleman. It came to be used for people who were not as like refined as they presented themselves to be. Wow. And that makes sense for a cocktail, because cocktails were considered low class, right? Like if you were fancy, you were drinking, you know, wine or port. But a cocktail was a liquor lengthened with water, sugar, and bitters. And so although it was like very socially acceptable here in the United States, there's still that level of like imposterism and masquerading. And there's some really interesting early quotes from the early 1800s. So the cocktail, it comes out in print in like the very, very early 1800s, as far as the word in print being used for a beverage. But around that time, in the few years following that, you see people writing about how cocktails were used by politicians to gain followers, because if they imbibed a cocktail, then their mind was fuzzy and they could be led in different directions. So you have kind of like a nefarious connotation with cocktails in the first 10 or 15 years of the use of the word.
Wow.
So
origin for the word. But for me, that one really sticks, because it's kind of, it's representative of this country where we were drinking those cocktails. I like that one. I lean into that one.
Yeah, that's very
and it
cool.
Seems like there's probably enough source documentation, like you said, with now the new collection of it and people actually putting time and energy into finding these source documents to sort of back up that theory. Whereas maybe not other, like there was one, I can't remember what her name was, but it was up in the Hudson River. They would put like cock feathers in cocktails. And that just seems a little spectacular to me.
Yes, wasn't it? No, it was that was actually a revolutionary era. It was one of the general's wives, and she purportedly made this, you know, alcoholic beverage for the soldiers staying in their home and garnished it with a rooster's feather. But
Betsy
what I
Flanagan,
like
about,
thank
her
you.
Name.
Betsy, but I wanted to say like Betsy Ross.
That's fine. Well, I do have to ask. Well, we were talking about the Sazerac. So specifically, let's go back to the Sazerac because that is our cocktail of choice today. And the reason we decided to make that is because, honestly, I had to be truly honest, even as a bartender for as long as I was and a bar manager and I designed cocktail menus, I literally never made or drank a Sazerac.
Isn't that crazy?
Ever. Until now.
I'm in the same boat.
It's awful.
So crazy.
It's awful. So tell us, first of all, it's delicious. And I know, I realize it's 2 o'clock and we are day drinking.
We are having...
Fine.
Alexa made a very delicious Sazerac. This is the first time, first day I've ever had it. And it's
you
quite
like
delicious.
It?
I'm excited to learn more about it. Please do tell.
Well, I mean, yeah, if nothing else, please. Thank goodness that this episode has had you make 2 Sazeracs. Actually, I thought it would be cool. So Sazerac is a great example of a cocktail with lots of different stories. Maybe it would be fun if you told me what you think the Sazerac story is based on what you've read so far, because that's probably similar to what anyone else who's not like doing this, you know, for a profession or really obsessive would come across.
Yes. So this is exactly that. So this is like from just articles that you would have gotten off of Google. So if you were to Google what was the first cocktail, this is what we came across. And the reason I wanted to save this, a part of me knew that like this can't be it because this is just too like
it's too simple,
it's
not, right?
It's too easy. It's too simple. It's too easy. And nothing's this simple. So it was like invented by Antoine Amédée Péchaud in New Orleans, in Louisiana. Obviously, New Orleans is Louisiana. And because of the invention of the bitters, it came about that the Sazerac was born in a very particular hotel. And I can't find the name of the hotel, but that, and then I found a really cool picture of like in the 50s of like a group of women that like stormed into this hotel and like demanded they be served Sazeracs. And there's this like old man bartender who's just like, okay, this is my life now. And like, these women, I'm like, I'm really proud of them. But like all these women like stormed in because they really wanted a Sazerac and they wanted to drink at the bar and previously they weren't allowed to. And I love this story. It's like, very romantic American origin. We're responsible for this.
Yeah.
There's like a hint of this romanticism of New Orleans in a sense of being, New Orleans is a southern central location to a lot of the angst of American history. And to kind of bring this romantic story into it, I feel like is what we do a lot of the times with most stories and origin stories of American history, where we try and take all of the bad stuff away and like implement this romanticized version of America so we become a little more comfortable with our very tainted past.
You nailed it. Yeah, I mean, cocktail history as one segment of that American history is very much, it's not just like glossing over the ugly stuff, but simplifying things, connecting unrelated stories into a new story that tells well and sounds good. Now, there's technically thousands of cocktails out there. Why are the 40 or 50 classics that we all know, love, and revere as bartenders, why are they classics? It's a combination of tasting good, good story. That doesn't mean true story. That doesn't mean true history. That just means a good story that's told about the drink, right? Because there's sort of a great cocktail is a fusion of a terrific name, a terrific story, and it tastes good. And sometimes that stuff is put together and fabricated after maybe the earliest date of that cocktail. And it is part of why cocktail history is so darn nebulous, you know? And I think the Sazerac is such a good case study of like what we think a cocktail is, what it might have been then, and actually what it's been through time. So I'm going to guess the Sazerac you are drinking, is it whiskey or cognac or a mix of the two?
It is cognac, Sazerac rye. I specifically got Sazerac rye.
So yummy.
Angostura bitters, Peychaud's bitters, Demora I'm not even saying that sugar right, am I?
Demerara.
Demerara. Yeah, thank you. I never.
You know what
it
you
right.
can do? You can just say dem. Dem sugar. Dem. Yeah, dem like sugar. Somebody who works with a lot of sugars is going to know dem. That's demerara.
You know, when I was a chef, I used to know stuff, and then literally I don't exercise the muscle anymore and it's gone. Like sometimes I'll be looking at literally a lemon. I'll be like, how do you say, I'll pull the Hilaria Baldwin. And I'll be like, how do you say lemon? How do you say? By the way, if 2020 gave us nothing else, it was the Hilaria Baldwin story. Anyway, I'll just look back on that very fondly. Anyway, and I washed the glass with absinthe, mm-hmm. and then I actually put it in the freezer to chill the glass, and then I muddled dem sugar and water, mm-hmm. and with both bitters, and then I put in ice, and then I did an ounce and a quarter of both cognac mm-hmm. and the Sazerac rye, and I stirred it, and then I strained it into a glass with a whiskey bottle, nice. And topped it with a lemon peel.
Well, is that correct? I love a split base Sazerac between rye and cognac myself. So I love that that's the direction you went in. If we're going to take the Sazerac's history as, you know, if we're going to say that that story that everybody reads is the true story and that Peychaud's bitters and like the drink were already happening in the early 1800s, really strong, it would have been made with cognac probably because New Orleans was a very Francophile city and there was a lot of cognac and brandy masquerading as cognac being drunk. And if we believe that story, the evolution of the Sazerac to whiskey has probably two reasons. And one big reason is something that disrupted drinking habits around the globe. And that was the phylloxera epidemic in Europe in the 1870s when a louse was introduced to Europe and basically decimated all of the vineyards of Europe and elsewhere. So basically there's this bug, this fly that decimated all the rootstock of all the grapevines. And so you'd think, oh, okay, well that affects, you know, the wine business and maybe port and sherry. But what is cognac? Cognac is distilled grape pomace. So without grapes, mm-hmm. without vineyards, you don't have cognac. Cognac or grape brandy were really, really big in the spirits world back then. What rushed in to replace cognac in many different places was whiskey. In the UK, you saw people start to drink a lot more scotch than they had before. And here in the United States, you start to see people drinking a lot more rye whiskey than they were before. And then another thing probably happened, which goes along very much with the sort of story of New Orleans. So, you know, at the turn of the 20th century, New Orleans, the identity is really becoming more rooted in being like a Southern American city than a French city. So I think that there's also then more kind of lean in to the idea of American whiskeys. And many, many people nowadays, when they make their Sazerac, they just use rye whiskey, absinthe, and the sweetener and the bitters and no cognac at all. So that's like a really, really easy kind of case study of like, oh, wow, you know, a couple of global events that we don't necessarily even think about anymore nowadays. And many people have, if you work in the wine business, you know what phylloxera is. But if you don't work in the wine business, you may never have heard of it and not realized how it disrupted drinking patterns and changed a lot of cocktails from being a different base spirit. But the Sazerac story is definitely not as straightforward as that. And so I think the Sazerac is also a great case study for how, you know, if you just believe what you read on that first Google page or two, you might end up with a very different story than what's probable. So the Sazerac story that I'm going to briefly cover is not something everybody's going to find. I've probably mentioned to you all before that one of the cocktail historians I really owe a lot of my education to is Dave Wandrish, who published two books on drinking history that were really kind of revolutionary to people in my field as far as like looking at all these source documents and really looking at what actually happened. And so Dave Wandrish, he does not cover the whole Sazerac history in his book Imbibe, which I definitely recommend to everybody who's interested in cocktail history. But I'm going to read you a super, super quick excerpt, if I can find it, which is where he addresses the Sazerac history. Quoting Dave Wandrish from his book Imbibe. Let me merely state for the record that the Sazerac was in no way the first cocktail, as has been asserted time and time again by its enthusiastic proponents. There is, in fact, no written record of it before the first decade of the 20th century, which is perfectly understandable. When all is said and done, the Sazerac is merely a plain whiskey or brandy cocktail made with Peychaud's bitters and finished with a dash of absinthe. A generation earlier, you could have ordered the same thing in any bar in America that served mixed drinks. So, breaking dreams and breaking hearts right there. The first publication of the word cocktail as a beverage is like 1803 or 1806. And within a few years, there's another publication of the word cocktail where it's defined by an editor of a journal as being a mixture of, you know, spirit, water, sugar, and bitters. So how come through most of the 1800s, none of the newspaper stories in New Orleans on the famous Sazerac Coffee House, multiple full-page ads, stories, how come no one is ever mentioning the famous Sazerac cocktail once in any of those documents from the 1800s? In fact, when is the Sazerac mentioned in writing as a cocktail? It's in the early 1900s, and it's attributed to someone who did take over the Sazerac Coffee House and run the bar and popularized the drink. He's credited as the inventor of the drink in this newspaper article. Now, we know that all has to be taken with a grain of salt. But what is certainly possible is that, you know, New Orleans loves its past, loves its nostalgia, and I love that about New Orleans. It's pretty conceivable that, you know, you could start saying, hey, this is actually like a classic cocktail from 50, 60 years ago. It's totally possible that you could lean into a story like that. And there's actually a really true case of something like that. If you guys have heard of the Seelbach cocktail, it's a great, so I'll tell this story real quick. So Seelbach cocktail is a delicious cocktail that involves bourbon, a little bit of triple sec, and champagne from the Seelbach Hotel in Kentucky. Well, this was published as like the hotel, one of the hotel's historic classic cocktails, got publicized in the early 2000s all over the place. And several years later, the bar manager admitted he had just made up that it was a classic cocktail from the hotel because he knew it would get traction, but he had created it. So, and there, wow, no knocks on him, but like bartenders throughout the 1800s, 1900s, and even today, we're full of bravado and bluster. You know, we're kind of pirates. Like, we're pirates that serve liquor. Yeah. So you can see that it's conceivable that in the late 1800s or early 1900s, the proprietor of the Sazerac Coffee House was like, I think this drink is going to be a hit, and I really want to make it a part of our history, whether it was or not. Throughout the mid-1800s, you see a couple of recipes that are very similar to the Sazerac, which involve brandy, bitters, and absinthe, published in different areas than New Orleans in New York as, you know, an improved whiskey cocktail. So basically in the 1850s and 1860s, that early version of an old-fashioned cocktail that was spirit, bitters, and water, bartenders kept improving it, and I'm using air quotes around the word improve, by adding, you know, a dash of Curacao, a dash of maraschino, a dash of absinthe. So you see this drink published in the mid-1800s, just without the name Sazerac. So it's possible that it really was in New Orleans in the early 1800s, but it's also really possible that there's a little bit of glamorization happening later on. What we can say about the Sazerac is that it did become really popular in the early 1900s in New Orleans. Whether it was as popular in the 1800s or around, that is a little bit more nebulous. But it was really popular in the early 1900s through a time when a lot of American drinkers were mostly drinking gin and gin drinks. And so I think that's a really interesting point about the Sazerac too, is that, you know, once it's made with whiskey, instead of brandy or cognac, it's also a way for New Orleans drinkers to lean into that idea of like a Southern American city by really promoting whiskey, which is, you know, bourbon or rye whiskey is really more American a spirit than something like cognac.
So I have to ask, what is the first cocktail? Like, what is it? Who made it?
Who made it? When, where, why?
What was involved?
Yes. It goes back to that conversation that we were having about how do we define cocktail? Are we defining a cocktail as the like 1806 definition of spirit, bitters, sugar, and water? Or is it a mixed drink? Because if it's a mixed drink, girl, we had, and I say girl to everybody, by the way, I don't use that as like a gender thing. I call men girl all the time. I'm like, girl, we had mixed drinks for a long time. So mixed drinks are, you know, they're around for a while before 1803 and 1806. And, you know, I know that I would say that the Brits were doing a lot of drinking and mixing. And so, you know, in the 16, 17, and 1800s, punch is huge in England. And that's definitely like a predecessor to the modern cocktail. There's like a cocktail origin story that is much less talked about than others. And I think I bring this up because I think this is an example of an early form of drink. And someone has tried to add the myth about cocktail into it. So, in the mid 1600s, you have Sir Francis Drake, the famous privateer, trying to sack and pillage Spanish colonies over here in the New World for his British queen. And there's a story about the origins of the mojito going back to this privateer and his crew who had some kind of epidemic on board. And so he treated his crew with a mixture of aguardiente, which was like moonshine made from sugarcane, which obviously was all around them, lime, mint, and sugar. And administered that to his crew. And I've found reference to that being administered on a spoon with a rooster carved on it and that being a cocktail. But I honestly think that's another example of us adding a little dash of extra history. But I will say that some historians will say, you know, that early version, it becomes more like a mojito in the mid 1800s when rum production is official and it's no longer like this aguardiente sort of moonshine situation. But some people will say that that's like the earliest cocktail. I mean, it doesn't have bitters in it, but it's kind of like a mixed drink.
So the mojito is the first cocktail. I'm just kidding.
I mean, here's the real thing. If we're saying that a cocktail is a mix of spirits, bitters, sugar, and water, the ancient Romans were drinking stuff like that. You know, we've been imbibing.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
we've
shit.
Been imbibing for a very long time. There have been bartender guides, you know, printed since the mid 1800s, but still most of cocktail history, most of what we're talking about has been passed down as oral history. And what happens with oral history, we adapt it to ourselves, to our time, and to things that we relate to. And I think that's part of the reason that some of these stories, even if like I, with the help of Dave Wandrush, can disprove those nice stories, those stories hang on because we've been like subtly adjusting them to ourselves, to our society, telling them to each other, and that they become tangible and we hang on to them.
Absolutely, we do. And I think this is a perfect place. You have so much to offer us, and I hope we get to have you back. But I think this is a perfect place to tell people about where they can find you and to sort of to send you off, because we have so much that we can talk about. But I really do think that we're definitely going to, I would love to have you back on. If you'd love to be back on the podcast.
I would love to be back on.
So Estelle teaches virtual classes. You can find all of her information, her beautiful recipes, her beautiful face, her beautiful leopard print top, all of it you can find on theladybossy.com. We're going to definitely have her back. But Estelle, thank you so much for joining us today.
I really, truly
appreciate your time, your expertise, your knowledge, your gift and your love and your passion for cocktails. So please join us again. But thank you again so much for being on Drink History.
It was such a pleasure. And I'm always down for an excuse to drink a Sazerac at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So
I love
next time, we'll prep you ahead of time and you can make one. We'll join each other. Listen, thank you guys so much for joining us
on our first episode
of Cheers. Drink History. Cheers. You can find us on drinkhistorypodcast.com. Subscribe where all podcasts are available. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everything. Bam, bam. We're going to be up on that. stay tuned for the next episode. I'm your host, Alexa Wilkinson.
And I'm your co-host, Mia Fiorito.
And we are Drink History. Drink History is produced by me, Alexa Wilkinson, and our theme song is by Blue Topaz. Episodes will be released every Wednesday and distributed by Anchor. Visit drinkhistorypodcast.com for more info.